again, fellow travellers, and welcome, after a slight delay, to podcast 182 in our series You Should Have Been There, with me, Mick Webb.
And me, Simon Calder. And today we're comparing travel notes from me aboard the good ship Queen Victoria.
And me, back from an island that has been compared to Jurassic Park. Not for its dinosaurs, but for its luxuriant forests. But I'm not going to give away the actual destination quite yet.
Keep us guessing, Mick. We'll also be hearing from listeners about traveller taboos, what you're not allowed to do, and indeed can get into serious trouble for in different countries. First, though, let's hark back to the last podcast about documentary disasters. And here's a clip that didn't make the cut, but was certainly relevant.
There is another document that you must have as a document rather than on your phone, and that is a driving license if you intend to drive.
Yes, you've had a few problems with that, haven't you?
I have, yes, particularly in Argentina, where I accidentally left my driving license on the desk of the car hire agency and only discovered it about 4 hours down the road. And then I had to communicate via WhatsApp, surprisingly. That was that is the general method of communication with just about everybody in Argentina about this disaster. And I was told that the photocopied license, because I had done my backup printing, and I actually had a photocopy of my license with me. But that is no good in Argentina, and probably no good everywhere else. And if you don't actually have an actual driving license that is yours, the police can immediately impound the car you are driving in. You are then in serious trouble.
Well, because Senor El car hire person is not going to be particularly impressed if you turn up and say, sorry, your car's been impounded.
No. Well, I told them that it was going to be incredibly difficult to drive back, and it would be illegal to drive back anyway. And they said, we discussed over the course of an evening all sorts of possibilities. One was that they would send a messenger of some kind at some point with my driving license, which they had by this time found. But we had plans to continue the next morning along the famous Ruta Nacional number 40, which is indeed an amazing road going from north to south of Argentina. But quite a lot of it is actually unpaved and extremely difficult to drive on, and not the sort of thing that you really want to be going on with a car which you don't have a license for driving. And eventually, the car hire company said they had consulted their lawyers, who said that they thought probably on this particular occasion, seeing as they had my actual license, we would probably be all right. And so we carried on with my photocopy. And other than a puncture, obviously, on the extremely horrible road, we had no trouble at all.
There we are. And I guess, Mick, travels with my photocopier could become quite a niche on its own, or a genre, perhaps.
I'll cut you in for 10% of the profits. but you know, when I was on my way back from my mystery destination, I got into a conversation with one of my fellow QEs in a not very speedy boarding queue for the flight back, who told me that he'd had a driving license disaster abroad because his youngest child had actually, unbeknownst to him, taken a felt tip pen to his driving license and scribbled all over it. And it took quite a long time for some sort of compromise to be reached about whether he could or couldn't have the car.
Gosh. I guess one benefit, as I'm sure the government would persuade us, of having long queues for UK border force, and indeed for passport formalities abroad after Brexit, is that you get to meet some interesting people with good stories to tell. And Rebecca has a good story to tell about what was nearly a passport problem. She says, we were boarding a flight last summer. The staff at the gate decided my daughter didn't look like the photo in her passport. Well, I'm frankly not surprised, because the in the photo, she was 9 years old with long hair. And now she's 14 with short hair and looks very different. Rebecca says the staff member scrutinised her photo for a while, consulted with his colleague, who also wasn't sure. He then said she would need to produce some other form of ID, which we didn't have. The queue for boarding was building up behind us by this point.
Oh,
thankfully,
no.
He seemed suddenly to decide that if she confirmed her details, he'd let her board. So I guess it was a bit of a quiz. And we've used that passport many times over the last couple of years, and that's the first time anyone's ever queried it. I'm very glad it was due to be renewed, and she now has an up-to-date photo. And yes, you do. You are legally required, if you no longer look like your passport photo, and indeed most people wouldn't ever want to look like their passport photo, you are supposed to get a new one. And of course, the experienced UK Border Force officers can look at people's features. And I understand that your ears are the real giveaway. However, if Rebecca's daughter had long hair and that covered her ears, that stops that happening. There we are.
Well, there is, of course, that old joke that if you do resemble your passport photo, then you clearly are not well enough to travel. But anyway, enough of that. I'm keen to know more about your maritime adventure.
Well, Mick, I was aboard the good ship Queen Victoria. I sailed from Aruba, interesting island. Actually, you would really like it from your linguistic point of view, because I did a bit of hitchhiking and I got lifts with all sorts of interesting people. I only spent 24 hours there. But for example, I got a lift with a local who said, yep, our mother tongue is Papiamento, which is a kind of Portuguese dialect. Then at school, we learn Dutch, because that's the
Dutch,
colonial,
I was guess at that.
Yeah, colonial language. This is the Netherlands Antilles, just north of Venezuela, of course. Then we learn Spanish, partly because, of course, very close to Latin America. And we also learn English. And so typically, an Aruban, and there aren't that many of them, will be able to speak four languages. The guest workers, mostly from Venezuela and from Colombia, some from the Dominican Republic as well. Anyway, we set for ourselves.
Can I just interrupt there to say that the inhabitants of the Mystery Island where I went actually speak a whistling language. But hurry on. Yeah, it's actually rather more clever than that, but yeah, it's more than clangerese. But anyway, sorry, go on.
Well, how exciting. I'm sure the audience is spellbound. So the talking of birdsong, the next kind of interaction with land was actually sailing through the Panama Canal. Now, you might have heard that the Panama Canal is running rather short of water. They have to limit the number of vessels that go through, but cruise ships, because they have important appointments to keep, are allowed to, they pay the appropriate sum to be able to get through. And you and I have been the length of the Panama Canal from Colón on the Atlantic side to Panama City on the Pacific side. And I made the transit, which involves going up a series of locks, basically sailing across a lake and then down another couple of locks. But meanwhile, you have been across the Continental Divide. And this was a joy. It took about 8 hours altogether.
Yeah.
Absolutely fascinating. Getting a different view of Central America. But you desperately wanted to get off and explore. And unbelievably, due to an issue with barnacles on the bottom, the ship's not mine, we indeed got an extra 24 hours, which meant that a day in beautiful Panama City was ours to have.
Did you spot any interesting wildlife as you went through the Gatun Lake, which takes up a good half of the canal transit. And I've done that in the other direction and from the Pacific to the Atlantic. And we saw all sorts of weird and wonderful things.
The main thing was actually frigate birds.
Yeah.
They were very, very prevalent and obviously very distinctive. They look as close as you will get to a kind of a modern day pterodactyl, I guess. They look really prehistoric. And apart from that, I was just enjoying the gentle drift through this amazing piece of civil engineering and coming out the far end under the Bridge of the Americas at what is, I think, one of the world's great nodes, possibly the greatest, because you've got the world's longest road, the Pan American Highway, born by the Puente de las Americas over the world's greatest shortcut, the Panama Canal. So very good. I need to hear more about your adventure, though. So should we start at the very beginning?
Well, okay. I recorded a few sonic highlights of the journey to get there, starting at 6 a.m. one morning when we set out for Tenerife, accompanied by Streatham's blackbird. Very smooth cab ride, 1 hour, door to door, South London to Gatwick North. And now the first really big holiday ritual, which is a flat white and a croissant pre-plane departure. Very nice.
Gentlemen, welcome to Tenerife, where the local time is just approaching 20 minutes past 2. Electronic devices for messaging calls and internet access may now be used. Please keep your seatbelt fastened and remain seated until the seatbelt sign is switched off.
Then there was a bus, the number 40, to Los Cristianos, a vast and sprawling kind of resort, and a 20-minute walk, because the bus didn't go where we wanted it to, obviously, down to the ferry port, and then a 50-minute fast ferry ride across to, well, you probably have guessed by now if you know your Canary Islands, San Sebastián de la Gomera, the bijou capital of La Gomera.
Well, a delightful and very smooth-sounding journey.
Well, there was actually one rather odd, quite a short delay when the aircraft, which had touched down, I think it was quite early actually, was then delayed because they couldn't turn the engines off. have you ever heard this before?
You'd think there would be a big red button on any kind of engine anywhere in the world, just saying, you know, press this to stop it. But maybe because that's not, you don't want to hit that by mistake in mid-flight, do you?
Maybe that's the
such
reason.
Such a button, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
well,
gosh.
Anyway, there was nothing generally to turn your hair grey or even greyer during the journey. And soon we were installed in a very nice little cabin on a hillside with a view of San Sebastián and the sea beyond. Well, it's quite a hazy looking morning. Can't really see the sea very well, but this is what happens when you open the doors. 50 mile an hour gusts are forecast today, so I hope it won't be too windy up on the mountain. It's a surprisingly wind-free day, which means it's possible to record as you walk along, and today we are walking from San Sebastián de la Gomera down to a beach, a black sand beach,
supposedly 1 hour and 20 minutes away. Quite a kind of a dry, rocky landscape. There's all sorts of pink rocks and strange looking rock formations sticking up. We've got a book of walks which is a few years old, and therefore there are all kinds of changes which haven't been noted in it, particularly at the beginning of the walk. So the first walk we did, which was higher up in the more forested part of the island, said blithely, "You open a gate and cross private property." Well, we tried to, and a terrifying dog and an even more terrifying owner came out, and she said, well, she was carrying a massive bag of cement on her head, which was pretty impressive, and she told us in no uncertain words that we were not to go through there. And although I pointed to our book and explained in as good a Spanish as I could that we wouldn't do any harm and it was a right of way, she said, "No, it isn't anymore." So that was the end of that particular walk, and we had to find another one. This time we set off from the beachfront esplanade at San Sebastian, and we're told turn right after the sports ground, but in fact it was in the middle of quite serious construction works, and eventually, with the help of a very nice local chap, we managed to blag our way through the building site, and then started the walk, which was half an hour absolutely straight up before then flattening out, and now we're going down towards the beach, and I hope it will be lovely and welcoming. We went swimming yesterday and the sea was 20 degrees, which is actually fine. This is the sound of a Canary Island shiftchaff, and they are pretty well ubiquitous on La Gomera, including in this absolutely beautiful stretch of walk through the Lauri Silva, the laurel forest, which is not really laurel at all, but it's made up of all sorts of different trees, many of which are similar in some ways to laurels in that they've got green glossy leaves, and love some rain, and this is the rainy side of the island, but there is no rain, nor has there been any for quite some time. This is a relatively short walk of a couple of kilometres from a car park on a very minor road, but like I think every walk on La Gomera, it is quite challenging in that it's, well, to start with, uphill all the way, and presumably at some point it'll be downhill, certainly on the return journey. Apparently there is an option of walking through a water tunnel which is nearly a kilometre long, and certainly in the rainy season is ill-advised. I think you have to bring your own torch, which I've forgotten now I come to think of it, so I could use a phone, and not sure I very much fancy it.
So you did a lot of walking. It's clearly not your average Canary Island. What did you think of it?
I thought it was great. You don't really do, as you suggested, conventional tourism. I mean, there isn't really a lot to detain you in San Sebastian, and it really is significantly the largest settlement on the island. I think I read somewhere that it had 17,000 of the population of 24,000 in it.
Yes.
And don't expect fantastic nightlife. There are a few restaurants and a few bars, and it's a pleasant enough place. And we actually very fortunately coincided with an absolutely splendid musical treat. A very interesting performance from, I don't know whether to call them a band exactly, but I think they call themselves a compañía, a company. So I'll call them a company. They're sort of more theatrical and musical. Compañía Pieles, which means skins, Pieles. Anyway, they performed an absolutely splendid, I suppose it'd be an hour and 20 minutes of Canary Island music, both folk and modern, with a most incredible array of percussion instruments. And it included... go on.
I'm just going to ask whether there is a touch of the Galapagos here, in the sense that small island, evolution of both people and music in a way that you don't find elsewhere. Is that fair?
Oh, well, that's a very interesting point, I suppose. Yeah, certainly a big part of one of the songs was two of the troupe, the company, actually, I think, conducting a flirtation, I think, in the whistling language Silbo, which was created and developed on this island, I think, only this island. And it's because of the huge number of ravines that it has, huge, deep gorges and valleys, and it's very, very difficult, obviously, to shout from one of these things across to the other, because it could be a mile away. But they developed a very clever use of whistling, including a grammar of its own. Isn't that incredible? So, and it does, it's not just sort of, it also involves some quite nifty use of a finger, which I certainly haven't managed to master yet. We were told by a really interesting woman who we met at the visitors' centre in the forested part of the island, that her children actually do an hour of Silbo every week at school. So fancy
that's
that.
That's brilliant. Yes.
Yeah. But yes, it is a bit of a mad place. Walking, I suppose, is the major tourist activity, but it's not walking for anybody. It really isn't, as I think my recordings suggested. Pretty well every walk involves a really steep climb or descent, because you've got to get out of a barranco and up to a pico, or vice versa. You can, of course, drive around and just look at things. And for that, there are tons of miradores, which are signed everywhere, which are vistas, viewpoints. And this allows you to get your hire car, or indeed your taxi, off the incredibly narrow and sinuous mountain roads, and to have a look over the most astonishing landscape of, mountains, crags, and on a clear day, you get a very good view of other Canary Islands. And all in all, really rather splendid.
Talking of those other Canary Islands, it sounds, from your beautiful description, very different from those. Although, actually, I've been to La Palma and La El Hierro, and they sound as though they have similarly dramatic viewpoints. But this sounds very exciting, and actually probably more interesting than Tenerife.
I think it certainly is. It is tiny. I mean, even compared to La Palma and Hierro, it's only actually 20 kilometers from north to south. But you'd never believe it if you set off down one of the two main roads. One's called number one and one's called number two. But it does take quite a while to get anywhere. Partly because the traffic is mainly made up of elderly tourists who are inching their way around these terrifying bends. And there are a few buses, but not that many, which makes it difficult because they tend to leave quite late in the morning, 10:30 for some reason. And then it takes them sort of 2.5 hours to get somewhere. And it's impossible to get hold of a timetable other than of when the buses start. So you know when they leave, but there is no timetable available of when they get to a particular stop, which is, the locals tend to know, but it actually takes quite a bit of guesswork and is really rather irritating. And if you ask why on earth is this, they say it's always been like this.
Yes. Gosh. I wonder, can I ask, as we elide from one part of the podcast to the next, were you forbidden from doing anything?
Well, it's not the sort of place where you get really forbidden from doing anything much, although we were forbidden from starting one of our walks, as I described in my recording.
Well, I ask because there's been a big response to our appeal for rules aimed at tourists around the globe. This was all started when I noted a sign at Delphi's Archaeological Museum in northern Greece, where you are warned it's forbidden to take improper or advertising pictures, to sing or make loud noises, to introduce food or animals, and, sorry about this, Mick, to enter the museum in bathing suits. And I was intrigued to see if there was anything more stringent around there. And indeed, well, religious buildings, unsurprisingly, require decorum from foreign visitors. Pat Stevens said the Russian church at Altea in Spain, ladies must wear headscarves, no photography permitted inside, no undue noise. But I'm tempted by Pat's description. Beautiful church from wood brought from the Urals. Well worth a visit. Phil Reed, meanwhile, says, well, actually, this doesn't sound strict, just respectful. Many Brits need reminding what that is. Visiting places of worship have pretty strict rules all around the world.
Yes, I think most of us get that. Greece seems surprisingly draconian. Tour guide Ted, for instance, says, we were threatened with the police for taking a teddy bear picture at the Acropolis and made to delete it despite it being a replica frieze. Absolutely no issue though taking my picture with the original frieze in the museum down the hill. Weird. Meanwhile, Dr. Jennifer Isles reports, husband was taking a photo of me in front of the charioteer in the Delphi Museum when one of the guards insisted I moved aside so that hubby could take a clear picture of it, of the charioteer.
Oh, no. Well, look, my favourite no-no is from Alan. In 1990, wife and I arrived in Phuket. A notice said, undesirables not welcome. It went on to list undesirable things, and one was anyone who wears silk underwear. Luckily, I had my jockey Y-fronts on. Well, look, we're always very keen to hear from our lovely listeners about their particular rules that they've fallen foul of. And indeed, if you've enjoyed La Gomera, the beautiful Canary Island that Mick was lucky enough to visit, or indeed Aruba and spoken in four languages to those people, or gone on a transit through the Panama Canal. You can tweet us at YouShouldHaveBT, also known these days as X, and you can leave us an audio message at anchor.fm/YouShouldHaveBeenThere.
But until our next podcast, from me, Mick Webb.
And me, Simon Calder. Goodbye.
Goodbye.